We're going to get back down to root causes, because if we're going to make true meaningful change, that's where it starts.
Well, and we're going to empower the people that are dealing with these kids every day. We're going to give them true access to resources that normally they don't have. We're 50 out of 50 as far as mental health in the United States, Texas, 2 years in a row. That's embarrassing. You know, as a Texan, that's embarrassing.
It is.
No, but what we've done is we've created a software that not only allows and empowers anybody in your community to report anonymously. We know that's one of the most effective ways to thwart something that's been proven statistically. It also, we've created a way to empower teachers. The teachers know, my wife's a teacher, they know every day which kid's having a good day, a bad day, a bad week, a bad month, a bad year. They know that. So on top of the anonymous tool that we've created that can be deployed throughout your community, we've deployed a teacher portal so that the teacher can now report, you know, concerning behavior directly to a law enforcement officer, designated, a designated administrator, a designated social worker, and a designated mental health professional. But it goes beyond that.
It does. It's focused. It started off as a behavioral health tool.
Yeah.
And when we started down that road, we realized that was like the tip of the iceberg. Like that was where we started. And then it was one of those things of truly digging in with professionals, people who do this every day, the best in the mental health world, the best in processes, the best in every aspect, brought them in, worked with us. And then we started applying something which is missing in this world called common sense.
Yeah.
And when you come back out and you look at that, everybody who has seen the solution that we have built is blown away at all of the problems that it solves for their, yeah, for their organization.
Well, the problem is that no one's looking at data, right? And so what our system does is every entry is a data point. That data point is then collected and analyzed.
And we can also take external data and analyze it. It's a complete and total game changer.
Yeah, it is.
And we're going to be releasing that. We've got some schools coming up on beta that are going to be.
Do you want to tell them about the mental health piece?
No, not yet. I don't think we're ready for that yet.
No,
but it's going to change. It's going to change. It will. Revolutionize there. We're bringing resources, capability, and processes, software, and common sense.
Well, what I will
and
say,
making something easy.
Yeah. What I'll say about the mental health piece, I'll just say this, is that no longer will you have the ability to say, we do not have access to a clinician. We don't have access to someone who can mentor a kid. We don't have access to someone that can do a mental health intake. We have that. It's built into our tool. And I can't wait to show it to these people and to everybody that's watching. This is something that we've been working on for a year. We haven't announced it yet.
And this is a passion. This is a passion project,
oh, yeah,
right? This is what this is. This is not about the money. This is never has no. been. It started because
we couldn't even give away a free version to the state.
We couldn't. It was
they
crazy.
Didn't want it.
No. This is about making a difference.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing that above everything else, today was homicide, right? But the thing that we're not talking about, and you know, this is one of those things that maybe we got to get David to start tracking if he could get the accurate data, but is suicide. High school students committing suicide.
Yeah.
Right?
Or just self-harm, you know.
These type of statistics, because we know what 16, 26-year-old leading cause of death is suicide. Mm-hmm. What are we doing about that? Right.
Well, that's the thing that no one wants to talk about is we talk about active shootings because it's a catastrophic, very emotional event like today.
Well, if it bleeds, it leads. I mean, that's an old news adage. It's awful. But that's why we hear about school shootings more than workplace shootings.
I want to know how many suicides we've had since January 1. Why are we not hearing about that between the ages of 16 and 26? You know, those are the things that I think that this software, and this is the beauty of it, is those are the things that this software is going to address as well.
The passion part comes into it is that we see it, we're in it. It's no different than NCSSD, right? It's not that you're in this for the money, right? That's not about it. It's about that you see all of these things going on. How do we change this? How do we change the direction? How do we get more qualified people so we can prevent things like this? How do we get the tools down at the root level that can identify this before we start looking at all of the madness?
Yeah.
Like all of the things that are in there. I'm involved in NCSSD as well, as far as working on the curriculum and the training for the technology side. And what was really, really interesting is it's a very, very diverse group that's on there. And so we have people who are on there who are, you know, some of the absolute leaders and school safety directors and emergency managers and things like that that are on there. And hearing their feedback about the technology, and some of them have deployed the technology and across their schools, wherever they're at. And, initially they were passionate about it. And when you start talking about, like we're talking about with gunshot detection, it's like you have it built in, right? And these things start driving home. And even these like noted professionals that have invested in it, and even people that you know, right, that have a background similar to yours that are now into the space, have stepped in somewhere and they have wrapped their arms around the technology that was there when they got there. And they're like,
this doesn't work.
This is awful, right? This is terrible.
We paid how much for this?
Correct, right? Yeah. And so it's not about the systems. Yeah. And I think that the number one thing that people don't realize what you and I bring to the table specifically when we talk about an assessment or rolling out technology or anything else is a systematic approach of a priority list, right? Like it doesn't matter what your budget was or is or what it's going to be. Here are your priorities. Here are the things you can do right now today that don't cost
you
anything,
nothing.
Right?
That I know. Free. When I go do my assessments, I tell them all the time, is look, the foundational component is the absolute most important piece, right? You know, I did an assessment for a former colleague of mine in another state, put together their mitigation.
It's the cheapest report. Part.
It is the cheapest part
of the whole
I had
equation.
45 items that needed to be mitigated from foundation to framework to finishes. 45. Of those 45, 28 of them were in the foundational piece. And I've told him and I've told his executives and the superintendent and the board, if you do these 28 alone, you will be far greater than 99.9% of anybody in the industry. Yep. And the majority of those 28 don't cost you a dime. Very little. It costs you some time, doesn't cost you a dime.
Right.
And the problem is that these people are continually persuaded by these companies trying to sell them the quick fix rather than the product that we've developed that is taking into consideration the raw and aggregate data that is your data. Right? It's not our data, it's your data. We're analyzing your data.
The other thing that we're seeing is that, you know, it's kind of a Me Too thing, right?
Yeah.
So the school district down the road,
the
board goes and does a visit there.
Yeah.
And then they talk about, oh, well, we installed this and we installed this. And they go back and we got to have it.
Yeah.
The school down the street.
They have it,
we
have
to
have
it.
No, you don't.
And it's just that. And then the predatory sales tactics to try to get there.
I think the problem also is that, like, you know, listen, I will never, ever, and I will continue to fight for victims. I don't care if it damages my reputation. I'm going to continue to fight for victims. Yeah, it is what it is. But the initial premise behind Alyssa's Law, and we're talking about panic buttons, you know, the mother of Alyssa has promoted this panic button law throughout many states. And I think there's some emotion that has played into those decisions being made and that legislation being passed without any real thought. does it really prevent anything? Now,
well, look,
I'm all for early warning and detection.
Absolutely.
Right? But like today, I'm being told and confirmed that this school had a specific system. I will tell you, I have seen that system, that one. I have tested it myself. I have been eyes on and watched, and it failed miserably. So I'm curious to see, based upon today's events, if or what the narrative comes from that company. If they say that it worked, if they say that it didn't work, I mean, listen.
I guarantee you they're going to say it worked. They're going to talk about
it. Did it, though? How it was. You've got four dead people. You've got nine wounded.
Here's the narrative unseen is that there were so many activations, okay?
Yeah.
Which gave information of where it was happening, okay? As if you didn't know where the shots were coming from, and that they made a call to law enforcement within so many minutes. That will be the narrative that will 100% be the press release. That will be the marketing. They will then spin this about how it was successful.
You know what's faster than minutes? Seconds. You know what's faster than pushing a panic button that takes minutes to call 911? Calling 911. Right? Why are we trying to reinvent the wheel here?
Well, the other thing that I have a real problem with was that the panic buttons in general, just how there was so many companies that came on the scene with, it has to be wireless.
Yeah.
We want it to be on the teacher, right?
Yeah.
And that doesn't make any sense to me.
No, right? Not at all. It doesn't create a standard. Substitutes come in. How do you give them the same as full-time employees?
We painfully recorded here in our podcast studio that exact conversation from Flo, right? And
Flo Rice was shot 5 times in Santa Fe. Substitute teacher did not have access to the same equipment keys, or keys or
training,
whatnot as a full-time employee.
Now
in the state of Texas, because of Flo, because of Ann Perkins and Ms. Tisdale, who perished, unfortunately, in Santa Fe, there's a law that states that substitute teachers must have the same equipment and resources to response as a full-time employee. Go ahead.
This is my bullshit flag. Okay, the law
We know
passed.
That's not the case.
It's not happening.
It was
right?
2019 that passed.
It's not happening.
Well, how many schools have we been in Texas that they're like, what? We don't have anything for subs. We don't give them a panic button. We don't give them a hard key. What are you, crazy?
Yeah.
It's like they don't even know what the law and the mandates are.
Not at all.
You know?
Not at all. And until that changes there, the panic buttons don't do anything. It's one of those things when it first came out, like, why would you do this? You have batteries. You have devices that wear out. People forget them. Oh, I left it in my car. It's at home. It's in my purse. It's in my desk drawer. I don't have it. I don't want to carry another thing around with me. It's an accidental activation. All of the things. What doesn't work? I mean, what doesn't have all those problems is a physical button on the wall.
Yeah.
We had it for years.
Yeah.
You went to school
in
a school where you could push a button and somebody would call down to the front office and they knew that you needed help in that.
I mean,
and it's just gotten better. You can do all kinds of advanced features with that.
Yeah.
We can call 911 from that button. And guess what?
From every classroom.
You don't have to go look for it.
No.
And it's physically wired. It doesn't require batteries. It works every single time.
It costs too much money, Mike. It costs too much money initially.
But when you go back and look at that, the subscription of these services.
It costs you more.
Exactly.
Dramatically
more.
That's what I don't get it, man.
Dramatically
I don't
more.
Get it. I
the maintenance, the batteries, the consumables, the loss, the broken, all of those things go away. And when we talk about these things, it's as if we're from another planet.
Well, wait a minute. You guys aren't on board with this Alyssa's Law on this panic
we're
buttons?
We're 100%. I get it. We need to call. We need to be able to go and get help. Okay, yes. I agree. But then how about we combine that with an intercom? Because you don't have an intercom in this classroom. You have no communication. So let's make that part of
it creates a standard in every campus that you have. It doesn't matter if you're on this campus at a training, you go to another campus doing another training, you know where all this stuff is at. It's like I've said multiple times. don't invest your money in a panic button where you've got a body-worn panic button that you've got to constantly monitor. You've got to change the batteries. You've got to make sure that your teacher wore it that day. You got to make sure that your substitutes have it that day.
And
you
know, what happens?
Install when a panic the button on your wall.
What happens when the battery's dead and that teacher goes to press that button and it doesn't work? What happens then?
Well, let's pray that she doesn't die that day, you know, and who's going to be responsible for that?
The problem is that we fell right into the trap. It doesn't matter. You've already lost. If you're having to press the panic
button, you've lost.
You've already lost.
Gunshot detection, you've lost.
You've lost.
Weapons detection, though it's good, you've lost.
You got to get back down to
it goes back to the basic foundations of observational patterns of behavior, assessment of those behaviors, and analyzing those behaviors, is what our software does.
Can you imagine if we started a podcast in 2018?
Oh, man.
Like when we were whiteboarding. Remember when we ran out of whiteboards and then we went to the pages?
Yeah.
And you're ripping the pages off and there's the room, like, it's just covered with all of this stuff.
I have some photos of that, man.
Yeah, well, I saw it. It reminded me today at the Security Magazine, the cover that was on there. There's a picture of you in that war room, right, on a laptop. And all those pages of one of our times where we went through it. But can you imagine what people would be saying to us back then if we were talking about that? I mean, I know they were
saying back then that I was crazy.
I know, but like if they truly knew like all of the things that we're doing, because we scratched the surface. Yes, there was documentaries, all that kind of stuff. True, I get it. But I don't think that they truly know all of the things that we did.
I don't think they do, man. And, you know, I think that they realize now. And listen, I will admittedly tell you, I made a lot of mistakes. I did. I made a lot of mistakes. I will say that to my former district and to the people that live there. I made mistakes, you know. But I think that no one could ever question my passion. And I think that's the problem with me, is that my passion.
When we talk about mistakes, let's clarify the mistakes. You were like a hammer.
I was the hammer, and everybody else was the nail.
When you didn't necessarily need to come at it that direction,
right? And I,
but that was that's a mistake on approach.
Yeah,
not that you made mistakes about the things you were doing.
My approach was wrong. I had a conversation with a former principal. Well, he's still a principal. Talked to him yesterday, and I told him, I said, you know, I wish that you got this version of Mike Matranga than you did back then, because what people don't understand, excuse me, is that even men like me, we suffer trauma, right? And I didn't know it back then, but I was suffering trauma myself from these particular events that had happened in my life. And I came in kind of hot, you know, admittedly. But I will tell you, the things that we did, everybody thought the way that we approached it and some of the things that we were doing, they didn't quite understand, or they thought maybe we were too much, right? Are the same things that are standard practice today.
Standard.
You know, it's standard practice, the things that I did in 2018. And I don't regret that, right? Like I said, you're 100% right. My approach was sometimes wrong. I admit that.
I don't even necessarily say it was wrong. It was... It wasn't the soft skills.
Definitely wasn't that are the soft needed, skills,
right? And so, what could it have been different?
Yeah, yes. Of course.
Right or wrong? I don't know that that was. Well, that's, I don't know yeah, that maybe I'd you're necessarily right. I mean, qualify that. Could it have been done softer?
Yes.
And could you have maybe kept an engaged audience a little easier?
Yeah.
Sure. But right or wrong, I don't know that. I think you're being too harsh with your word selection there.
Maybe you're right. I just, you know, I wish that, you know, that they could have got the version of me now.
I would disagree. Because
really?
I think that.
Why?
There were so many times that there was so much pushback whether it was the New York Times reporter or it was this person or that person who was inflicting their views and their, you know, will upon you, you had to have a certain toughness to blaze your own path. And that path proved the way for what became the standard today. So could you have had some better soft skills and communication and been a little bit softer on it? Absolutely.
I think people will argue that I can still have some better soft skills at times.
Yeah. But that's not who you are. And if you would have been potentially open, I think it may have changed that course of history.
Yeah, maybe. Right?
And so could it have been approached? Yes. And I think that you're a great mentor for people who are entering into the K-12 space, who come from, you know, a military or Secret Service or, you know, executive law enforcement type of ranch that comes in and says, okay, hey, look, the things that you did in the department, it's not going to work well.
It's funny you say that, because I actually do have a former colleague of mine who's entered the K-12 space. The guy's brilliant, super qualified, right? But he, like me, he's blazing a trail. And, you know, I've been working with him. He's doing a fantastic job. He's getting a little bit of the pushback that I initially got, that I told him that he's going to continue to get, and it's probably going to ramp up. So I've been working with him and providing some guidance. In fact, I can't do this for everybody, but, you know, I've sent over an agreement to his administration and said, look, we've done our work. We've given you your strategic plan moving forward. I want to stay on with you guys as an unpaid consultant until January 1. So for the next 4 months, I want you to lean on me for advice. Not necessarily that I want to give free services away, but I want to provide a guide and a mentorship for my former colleague.
Right.
And so like I've told him, I said, you know, you have to understand, the K-12 industry is very unique, right? Take it from someone who has been there, who has done that, that, you know, sugar attracts more flies than you know what. And it may not be how you want to proceed forward with some things, but you have to understand that there's got to be a balance, right? You can get your point across without being the hammer like I was. You know, at the end of the day, like I told him, you have to document. You have to document everything, right?
I don't know. I disagree with some of this. I think you're being way too hard on yourself in this whole thing. Because part of this and the way that you're going about it and saying this is you have to document. That's you conceding to somebody else's will in some cases, when you really needed to be set the line in the sand and be like, we have to do this. Because when that day comes, when that cloudy day comes and we're standing in front of the media and this happened, what did you do?
Yeah.
You're gonna want a guy like me who said, here is what we did. Here are all the things we did.
Yeah.
Not to go running back to your filing cabinet or your computer to go, well, I presented this and they told me no, and I documented it. Here are all the documents.
I'm in no way saying surrender.
Okay.
That's not what I'm saying.
All right. I just want to make
sure. I'm saying you continue to fight, but in that process, you document your path so that in the event something does happen, and let's say that it, you know, what should have taken 3 months to.
But why are we there? Why are we headed down the path of CYA? Like, why? Let's call a spade a spade.
I don't think that K-12 is prepared for the truth.
Being inconvenienced?
I don't think anybody's prepared for being inconvenienced. I mean, and that's the deal, man, is like you said earlier when we started this podcast. I mean, security is not convenient. You know, but it boils down to the people. I don't care what product you buy. You know, I can give you, I've said this a million times, I give you a Lamborghini. You put 87 octane in it, it's not going to perform the way that it should. I can give you a $10 million security system. If you don't have the resources, if you don't have the policies and the procedures and the plan in place to support that, and you don't have the most important P, the people who understand it, you are going to fail.
You know,
it comes down to the people.
We, speaking of being the hammer, we had a customer who was absolutely against wearing IDs.
Oh, right? God.
And so I've done this now with both a school and a corporation, and it's like, our people won't do it. We won't wear it. It's a hassle. It's this. Yeah. It's that. It's whatever. And so one of the things that I did with both of these customers was I scheduled a lunch in the energy corridor, right at prime lunchtime, right? And so we start off conversation, go through, we talk about convenience versus security, being able to identify who is this person, are they in the right area, are they authorized, being able to control access, all of the things. And it comes back down to the ID, right? Take a look around this restaurant. How many badges you see? And every one of those major corporations, every one of their employees is wearing a badge. Right? It could be clipped on their belt. It could be on the side of their purse. It could be whatever. Every single table over there, there's a credential on every single one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I said, it works for this companies. How many companies are sitting in this room right here, right? And so it is a culture. Security is a culture. And the things that you went through and the things that your friends are going through is you are trying to change the culture within there, and it is tough.
It's tough, man.
Yeah, because it is. Again, it's inconvenient, right? Yeah. It's inconvenient to do all of these things.
Well, it's part of the mindset also. You know, I mean, I come from a background where we have a no-fail policy. We had a failure July 13th of this last year with the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump. But that doesn't take away the mindset of men like me, or of men like my former colleague who's in the K-12 space, or other former colleagues who are in the K-12 space. We know what we know based upon experience, right? And that's one thing that I think that the K-12 space is lacking, is experience. And that's the premise of NCSSD. And I'm not promoting NCSSD. I'm promoting the concept behind it, that we have to have vetted, qualified individuals. Getting back to what I was stating earlier about school boards hiring retired former police chiefs or patrol officers and then promoting them to a security position simply because they were a police officer. Now, listen, there's some amazing former police officers who are now security director. Jason Stoddard, one of them. You know, Jason is in Charles County, Maryland. He's the chairman of NCSSD. Jason gets it.
He does.
Jason also was a former Marine. Or no, I'm sorry, Jason. I can't remember if it was Marine or Army. Sorry. But
probably Army.
I think he was Army. I think he was Army. Yeah. But Jason gets it, right? But he has extensive training and experience in emergency operations, mm-hmm. emergency planning, emergency command and control. That is not what your average law enforcement officer has.
Oh, and he's right? More than likely seen some type of combat, right? And so it was one of those things that received real world training and it's in there. That's one of those things that we have done with schools. You know, the local hospitals and doctors will provide some trauma training, a lot of times mm-hmm. free, no cost, stop the bleed training, et cetera. There's tons of free resources out there. And that's awesome. That's great when you get a paramedic or a doctor, ER doctor to come in and do that. And that's great. And they're going to give you the very sterile approach to how to stop the bleed and how to, you know, in this perfect setting, this is how you apply.
It's never a perfect setting.
My favorite and most productive trainings have come from people who have seen a lot of really nasty stuff on the battlefield. They are brash. They will tell you how things are, and you got to do what you got to do, and literally start flipping over tables and start grabbing stuff and say, we're gonna see what we have here and what could I use to make a makeshift tourniquet? How could I pack a wound with just what's sitting around here? Those are things that really hit home. And it's like, they drive home. You only have this much time. You have to do it. You have to get there.
Yeah.
And there's no things in there. And that seems to hit home more than the really sterile, you know, hey, we're going to go through this agenda. This is how you do this and everything else.
Right. Well, it's training by PowerPoint. Right. You know, I can recall Tom Munoz.
So Chief.
Yeah, Munoz. Chief. Tom was Tom is a retired Coast Guard commander. He also is a retired assistant chief of Houston Fire. Then he went to work for a Texas City Office of Emergency Management as the director, which is how we got to know each other.
Then
he went to Houston as the director of Office of Emergency Management. Now he is the fire chief
for City of Houston.
And I could recall Tom and I. This is terrible, but I can recall Tom and I going to an ICS active shooter training that was held by, let's just say, a local Office of Emergency Management, by an individual who had zero experience, absolutely none. And I remember watching this training, and it was like watching paint dry. It was the worst training I've ever been to in my life. And I looked at Tom and I went, dude, this is terrible. Like, this is terrible. I would rather have, straight pins shoved under my fingernails at this point.
Well,
you know, but it was just simply reading ICS from a PowerPoint.
And this is part of,
it's not engaging.
This is part
man.
Of what
you don't
I'm
learn
talking
from
about
that.
When you get the veteran involved, right? This the person who's seen, you know, some real combat. There's a high probability that there's gonna be some F-bombs dropped. There's going to be some shock and awe. There's gonna be some stories, right? And everyone is engaged.
Yeah,
right?
You gotta keep people engaged. Yeah. You know, it's like when I go do speaking or whatever, right? I'm not like most presenters. I love engagement from the audience. Like, I like questions. I love it when people ask me questions. Hey, or I start asking them questions. I'll get off script. I'll start asking questions. Hey, what do you think about this? Have you done this? You know, I like that, man, because it gets people engaged, and I think it gets by. I think there's buy-in, but you know, it's just, you know, you go to a lot of these schools and they're like, yep, we did our drills, check. We have an EOP, check. We've got such and such here. We've, you know, done our behavioral threat assessment training a year and a half ago, check. No follow-up training to that, no instruction on the product that they're using, check. You know, it's like, come on, man, let's stop checking boxes. Let's get down to it. Let's make sure that the people that you're preparing are prepared.
I will tell you that one of the things I am concerned about that's going on is this standard setting. So, you know, NFPA was one of the first that came out with a active shooter annex to NFPA. But now we're starting to see UL and ANSI and all of these things. And so what I am concerned about is that, you know, the adoption of codes and it how it's applied across the United States and how all of these different standard setting organizations are all trying to sell
something,
right? And they're just trying to crank this stuff out. And even at a standard setting organization, it's coming down to money.
Well, right? Here's the deal, man. I mean, like NCSSD, like we created NCSSD. It's a 501c3 nonprofit, you know, with what I think are some of the best professionals in the K-12 security space. 3 months later, another entity established another. This is for, you know, another, you know, nonprofit, whatever they call it. And it's a spinoff of another foundation or another entity that does these, you know, big annual SRO conferences and whatnot. Listen, good for them, you know, good luck to you. But I mean, at what point do we stop? I mean, we started the NCSSD and then, oh, well, we don't like you guys. We want to start our own, or we don't like your philosophy. Well, and
the problem is that...
So they start their own. So it's like, come on, man. Like, where does this bullshit start? You know, stop. I mean,
yeah,
come on.
And now I think it just muddies
things up. Just waters it down, man. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, I can tell you this. We don't take any money.
We do this shit for free. Like, you know, even just SRP, right? The differences across the country.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, why? Why are there competing voices there? Why is it not the same in North Carolina
that it is in South Carolina and Texas and
Why do we have to have all of these? Like, collectively, you know, the day of horse and carriage is gone. We have this thing called the internet and Zoom meetings, and we can get people together and they can create these things, exactly what you're doing, and create best practice.
Where's our Department of Education?
Why is
the federal DOE not creating a standard? You know, you know, and I'm not saying that that's something that I promote, because I truly believe that states should have the right to do kind of their own thing. But in some regards, there needs to be a minimum standard, you know, throughout the United States. If this is what the requirements are, where the hell are they? All these active shootings, where the hell is Department of Education? You know, they don't have any problem sending out all of these, you know, mandates and restrictions regarding students with disabilities, you know, and I'm not even going to enter that conversation because we'll be here for a while and I'm sure somebody will get really angry at us. But at the end of the day, I mean, you know, they don't mind imposing their will on school districts and telling them how they need to handle kids that are, you know, discipline problems that become violent problems, and then they threaten to withhold funding from them if they you know, report accurately.
So my fear is that, and we've talked about this, like, we have the perfect storm brewing this year, specifically this year.
Oh yeah, it's coming.
Perfect storm.